Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is the last day of August 2022. August 30th, if you haven't figured it. Actually, August 31st. Sorry about that. If you haven't figured that out by now. Tomorrow's September. Happy Labor Day, everybody. Hope you have a good weekend, although we have shows tomorrow that I hope you listen to. Today, we got a really cool show. We're going to go talk to our good friends over at the school design, school architecture firm of Fielding International. And they are, we got Mike and Justin here. I'll introduce them in a minute. But they're working currently on a school in Tensleep, Wyoming. Tensleep, Wyoming. All right, which is a small community, I think, of about 300 residents. And they've got about 142 students in pre-K-12. They're building a new school that's going to be multi-generational, a real learning, great environment, all that sort of stuff. About 5 hours north of Laramie. And we'll talk about Tensleep and what they're doing over there and why they're doing it and how they're doing it, okay, with Mike Patsoumas and Justin Dibble in just a few seconds from Fielding International. They have great stuff. You will learn a lot about school design, and it's kind of fun. Go to Fielding International. That's FieldingINTL.com. And there's a lot of fun stuff over there, and you can see how schools are designed these days, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. And that's where our consortium, our American Consortium for Equity and Education, lives. We have our magazine over there. If you click on the cover of Equity and Access, you'll be able to read our new back-to-school issue. Thank everybody right now for going over there. So many people. We really appreciate it. It's a good back-to-school issue, and it's focused, again, on equity and access in pre-K-12, which is what we do. We're really concerned about that. And so, by the way, is Fielding International. I got to tell you, they built schools with equity and access to learning in mind, and they'll tell you all about how they're doing it over there. If you go over to ace-ed.org, all these things are linked over there. Our awards, our Excellence in Equity Awards program is over there. Okay, just click on the awards icon. All the work we do in teacher retention, teacher-retention.com, again, linked. Okay, we have some great professional development over there. If your school district might be interested in that, we have several choices over there. That, again, we're trying to make, if we feel that if there's good professional development, teachers will stay in their job. We don't want to lose any great teachers, and so we produce that. We have seltoday.org, which is our social emotional learning resource center. And, of course, we archive all our podcasts over there, just as this one will be when we are finished. All right, so please go over to ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on Mike Patsoumas and Justin Dibble, both from Fielding International. And I'll say hi, Mike. Welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here and excited to talk about Tensleep and a really amazing project in a really rural and unique community. So,
well, we're going to talk about that. I mean, really and truly. And Justin, thanks for being here today, buddy. Justin Dibble.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Larry.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
Really excited to be here and share our experience.
Right, it's great. And by the way, Justin did have jury duty this week, and I think you didn't sleep through it. Okay, you're not supposed to be there. They did not select you, right? Congratulations.
Correct.
Doing your civic duty. You did good.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good. Everybody hates it, but it's really part of living in the country. That's all there is to it. Okay. Now, this show basically is how a small community, and I'm talking about a community I think of about 300 people max, okay, and literally 5 hours from Laramie, okay, they're creating a multi-age, multi-generational school, an educational space, a learning environment. All right. And they hired Fielding to build it. OK. And so I think I'm going to start with Mike. And Mike, just I think I know Tensleep. When I read about when we were preparing the show, I think I know Tensleep from a Joe Pickett novel, which all take place in Wyoming. Yeah, I think so.
Really? I haven't heard that one yet. Crazy.
What'd you hear?
Well,
I know it from somewhere.
Well, yeah. So, you know, to be honest, I'd only I actually lived in Wyoming for a really short period of time. And when I was living in Wyoming, I had heard the name, but had never been there. But I will tell you, this is an amazing community. It's extremely tight-knit, and it is a beautiful place. They have a beautiful canyon, rivers, mountains, and forests. It's an amazing location. So really great place.
Wow.
And great people, first and foremost. So.
Am I right? Was there about 300 people in town?
Yeah, it's about 300, a little over 300 people in the actual town. And the school itself does serve some communities outside of Tensleet, but we're talking, 45-minute to hour bus rides for some of these students.
Wow. It's just amazing. I did look it up on the map, but I think I got it in a Joe Pick novel. I really do. It's just astounding. Do you know how it got its name? I bet you do. Justin, do you know how it got its name?
So historically, Tensleet was an American Indian rest stop, and it was basically 10 days travel, basically from the southeast of a town called Fort Laramie, and it was 10 days travel to the northwest to Yellowstone. So it really got its history from basically, ranching community and those, trekking and exploring, and it's located right at the base of the Bighorn Basin. So it's absolutely gorgeous country. It's about 100 miles east of Yellowstone, and it's just incredible. The scenery, the community, and it's bustling with tourism. It's really growing.
That is,
community.
That is cool. Did you wear a cowboy hat when you were there? A lot of people do buy them, you know.
I did not.
Mike?
I didn't get my cowboy hat. We did bring some nice boots, though. I remember a couple meetings with a fair number of cowboy boots. So yeah. We're trying to do our best. Yeah.
Well, it's fun to go to these places, which are not what we're used to. And I love seeing that stuff and buying that stuff. I got to tell you, it's really. Where did you fly into when you went there? How'd you get there? Where is it? What's the nearest airport?
Yeah, so like there's a couple ways to get in. Billings, Montana is one spot, and then the other is Sheridan, Wyoming. Those are the two nearest kind of larger towns. But Sheridan is a very, very small place too, and so it's not it can actually be tough to get a flight into Sheridan. So Billings is usually where we fly into, and then we drive south, 3 or 4 hours depending on the weather.
It's really interesting. We live on the East Coast. Everything's close together, and it's just it always just fascinates me how much land there is out there, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So I'll stay with you. Mike, talk to me. How did you get in touch, or how did they get in touch with you? What's the idea behind this? Talk about the school. What are they doing?
Well, Fielding always works with local architects. That's a huge part of our job, because to design a really great school, you really need to understand the local context of any project. And we had the fortunate opportunity where Fielding does a lot of presentations around the United States and around the world about great school design.
Yes,
and one of the local architecture firms, Arret Design Group, one of the principals of that firm actually reached out to Fielding and said, hey, we've got this amazing opportunity for a project to really work with this community and do something special. They need Fielding on this work because it's going to be such a great space, and it's so important to the community. So Arret Design Group reached out to us and said, let's do this together, and so that's how we formed the team.
Wow, it's amazing. And, I love what you just said, how important a good school and a long-lasting school is to this community. I think that says a lot, that little sentence right there. Okay, it's really something. Talk about who lives in the community. Well, who are the people Native American? Who are we talking about here? Mike?
Sure,
Justin.
Justin.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so the town really, in terms of its commerce, ranching is really one of the main, thoroughfares that keeps, the local economy going. In terms of that, there are some small mineral mining operations, and obviously there are some groups, that travel to the neighboring towns. In recent years, they've had an uptick in tourism as well. It is a remote destination, but it's geographically located, with the Bighorn Basin, with the rock climbing opportunities, hunting is another one that's big in the area as well.
Sure,
so,
sure.
There's a lot of vitality and a lot more opportunities emerging, through different markets as well.
And when you keep saying Bighorn Basin, is that like General Custer's Bighorn? Is that there?
Yes, I believe so. It's further north, so.
Yeah. Okay. Little Bighorn.
It's the Bighorn Mountain Range. Bighorn Mountain Range on the east, and so it's some of the geologic features of the region that really define this place. And the Bighorn Mountains are a beautiful, large mountain range, high peaks, ski resort, all that good stuff. So, but as Justin mentioned, this town is really reliant on cattle ranching, and there's, as he mentioned, some mining and some oil and gas operations in that area as well. So
it's so cool. So, what did they have in? And I'll stay with you, Mike. Now, what did they have in mind? What made this unique as you were building the school?
Well, one of the things that when we came and we first visited, quite literally, this building is in the middle of the community. There is there's not a lot of public infrastructure in Tensleep. I mean, it's just such a small place. And so the school is truly the center of the community. And a lot of schools say that. They say, oh, the school is the heart of our community. In Tensleep, it literally is. And as a consequence of that, the school is used for everything, everything from sports events to teaching and learning, obviously, but also public gatherings, town hall meetings, even weddings, because it's the it's a large place where people can gather, and so celebrations and mourning and everything happens in this school, and as a consequence of that, the idea of the entire community coming together was one of the central drivers of how the school needed to be designed. It literally was a place where the youngest newborn members of the community and the oldest Navy veterans and ranchers that have been in this community for decades come together and meet one another and build community and really establish relationships. So as a consequence of that, it really created an amazing opportunity to help this community build or imagine and then design something that they will cherish and use for, years and years and years to come. So it's really exciting.
And you're right. They will cherish it. They're going to build it together. I agree with that. What was doing with the old school? Where was the old school? Was that in town too?
Yeah, Justin, do you want to kind of explain the process that we're having to navigate here? Yeah,
Justin, do it. No, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So the existing school, as Mike was saying, is the literal and metaphorical heart of the community. It's where all the events come together. It's where everybody congregates, and sports, community, that's the livelihood of the entire community. So what's unique about this, and we're seeing this is a trend with most schools, is, how do you create a new building while maintaining the existing operation of a school with minimal disruption, into the new space. So this is what we call a transplant school, where the design team had to come up with a scenario to use the existing school grounds to be able to design and build a new school. And while that's in construction, the existing school is still in operation. But once the new building is up and running, staff and students will transition to that building, and then the existing building would, be demolished from there. So the new building is going to be located just north of the existing school. The existing building is a single story, and for a lot of opportunities and reasons, we're looking at a multi-story building for this new school.
I'm curious, why multi-story this time? There must be a reason.
Yeah, so some of it is the actual geography. So north of the existing school, there was an existing track and play field, and the grade starts advancing to the north of the site. So we came up with a few scenarios of a single story layout. We came up with a few concepts for a multi-story layout. And, through the workshop and engagement, there was a lot more opportunities and affordances with that multi-story layout. And we could talk a little bit more about that when we get into, the internal workings of it. But just really the ability of, obviously, there are always site constraints and things that we need to be able to build around. But just one of the key drivers that emerged as a theme is how small and basically supportive the community is, right? So we heard that all kids know and support one another in their school culture and their school community. So in looking at the concepts of multi-story, we kind of realized that that actually provided more opportunity for kids to have more crossover, more continuity with their learning, and also just kind of knowing and seeing one another, again, you know, in that smaller school setting.
And, you know, this is a pre-K-12 school, all right? I know you guys believe in open spaces, but sometimes I have to ask this. It's, you know, a 17-year-old is a lot different than a 4-year-old. I don't think I'm telling anybody something really that they didn't know before, okay? And, you know, you have to teach a 7-year-old and care and discipline, et cetera, a 7-year-old differently than you do, okay, a 17-year-old. Okay, but yet this is going to be a pre-K-12, right? I have to ask, what's the layout look like? Okay, Mike, I'll swing back to you. What's the layout?
Yeah. Well, so I'm gonna build on what Justin was saying about this multi-story opportunity. We're actually using this hill that exists on this site to help separate the elementary kind of learning environment and then that middle and high school space. So the elementary students will have a learning community on the main floor of the school. So when you arrive at this campus, the elementary students, just like you would at like a classic community school, you have this beautiful welcoming entry. Students are greeted by the teachers, and it's right on the main floor. It's easy to get in and out, and creates a great experience for those kids. But the building is actually using this hill on the campus to then create a secondary level that, as you drive up the hill on the side of the building, you can then arrive at the secondary level, which has almost its own entryway and kind of its own unique space. So that also has a learning community for the secondary students. And then there, the middle, so like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, those students are all sharing some of the same learning environments because the school is so small, they have to, right? There can't be, this building can be massive. It is still it needs to be a small footprint. So that middle school and high school environment is also a shared learning space. And then what Justin has done is designed this amazing heart of the building with a beautiful stairwell and a community gathering and performance space where both the secondary program and the elementary program share these middle environments where you have the physical education, the music, the art room. All of those are in shared spaces. And so these two kind of zones kind of come together at the heart of the school. And so the students will still see each other. They'll still be able to learn, next to one another. They'll be able to, we have a lot of community members in the school that have 4 or 5 kids, all from the same family attending, and they like to eat lunch with one another. So we've created a family-style dining area. And so the community can really still thrive as an individual community, but then when you're doing core learning, you have more dedicated spaces assigned for those students.
And, you know, and Justin, let me swing back to you. Mike was saying that it's a small footprint, okay? But at the beginning, we said the town is growing a little bit, et cetera, you know, tourism, all that sort of thing. Things are good, you know, gas and oil and that sort of stuff, okay? Is there room to grow? And B, when you create a smaller footprint, and I know Fielding, okay, you folks like to design schools with open spaces, where kids aren't confined so as much as the old traditional school classroom used to be, okay? But then I'm going to go back. It's a small footprint. Just talk about how you meld those two things together because I know what you guys like in the school. Justin.
Sure. Great question, Larry. One comes up, a lot about how we would use patterns to break down the scale of a school. So one of the first ways is really working from the big idea of community space and then the student teacher spaces. So we kind of have different zones to the building that describe more of the public engagement sides, right? Spaces that can be used for evenings and weekends and after hours when, you know, school is not in session. But then we have what Mike was talking about, those learning communities, right, which we have elementary on the ground floor and then elevating middle school and high school experience. And then specialty program kind of surrounding that. And what that allows, it allows for more of a multifaceted building, right? One that can support the functions that we heard from the community, things like they do an annual harvest dinner. They needed a space for large group gatherings.
Nice.
So basically between the heart space with this central gathering stair, they can have theatrical performances because that's a program that they want to grow in the school. But they also have a large, it's basically a full court competitive size gymnasium that supports high school athletics and two cross courts. So, you know, when neighboring districts are coming in for events.
Wait a minute, you say in two what? What was the last thing you said?
Two cross courts, right? So in terms of, you know, practices. So the gymnasium is very important to this community as well. There's a little bit of, you know, town rivalry and that sense of pride, you know, that the Tensleaf community, you know, wears. And but getting back to the core learning spaces, what's really unique about this school is it is a PK-12 learning environment for about 140 students. Now that's what we would call the design capacity. So the classrooms are about 12 students. Some years it might be 8 or it might be 10 students.
Right.
But every school we design, we have to think, you know, 10 years down the road, 30 years down the road. How can the space evolve to support evolution and learning? How can the spaces support growth as well? So that's more where the learning community model, you know, spaces like having a breakout commons, having small group spaces, the heart space, even the cafe, we use the language very intentionally. So it is a cafe, like home-like dining experience. More so than like a cafeteria or a cafetorium, right? So like even getting into the weeds of the furniture and the technology and all of the resources that support these learning spaces and community spaces is very critical to think about through all phases.
I just want to add, with that learning community model, because you have a range. You have a range of spaces built into this community. So I know you say we like open spaces. Really what we like is flexible spaces that have agility that you can use for multiple different reasons. And so even though these are smaller classroom environments, they still have that same agility because there's a variety of different spaces that the teachers have access to. And they can use those shared spaces so that first grader and that fifth grader in the elementary zone can still be reading next to each other. And most importantly, that fifth grader can be helping that first grader read. That fourth grader can be helping the kindergartner work on a project. And so the commons area is even more important in this school because they're already having their young students work with younger students there. They're already having their high schoolers come down and support learning in these areas. And so it's important that they fit a wide range of needs. They support a wide range of activities. But there are still defined classroom environments surrounding these flexible and agile commons and small group and seminar spaces.
Mike, what are the old, or Justin, I don't care who, I'll ask Justin. Justin, well, what did the old school look like? Was the old school, a traditional type of school? Just what I'm thinking of, just a small one-story school, as you said. And it had just had classrooms and a auditorium and a cafeteria and a gym, and that was that. Okay? I assume that's what the old one looked like. I don't even know how old it was, but you know. Okay? How old was it, by the way? Like, how old was the old school?
Yeah, you're precisely right, Larry. The school about 60 years old, so what we would call a cells and bells model, you know, corridors with classrooms on either side. Cool. There were a few additions over the years, right, to support the growth of the community and the additional program needed. But obviously, you know, you can only go so far before, you have challenges with circulation, you know, aging technology, patterns that are really hard to create 21st century learning models within existing spaces. One thing to add that's also unique about the learning experience is the school actually does not have an internal library. The library is actually right across the street and is part of a community asset. So most of the literacy resources and digital resources actually reside in the community library.
That's interesting.
And in the past, I think about 3 years ago, they completed a vocational building, a VOAG building, right across the street as well. So another unique pattern was thinking about this a little bit more like a collegiate campus, if you will, where, you know, your upper class students are actually, you know, exploring other areas, supporting learning beyond the traditional school environment as well, right, through skilled trades and labor, through, you know, journeyman type experiences. So we spent a lot of time working with community members and how we can best position, you know, the program, the organizational model, you know, again, to support the students short-term and long-term.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. By the way, I do like that, okay, that they're able to use the town library right across the street, the Votech building. I mean, I can picture the campus idea. I do kind of like that. I think that's cool. You know, small town, you combine resources. I think that's not such a terrible idea. But what brings to mind my question is you go into a small town like Tensleep. They've got a very traditional old 60-year-old school, like many communities do, okay? And all of a sudden, and this is what I love about you guys, you go in with new ideas. Schools have changed. Schools have to reflect the way people learn these days. And I'm curious, with the principal, with the school board, with the community, was it hard to convince the folks in Tensleep that this is the way we have to go? That it's a brave new world out there in terms of what schools have to be, you know? And I think it's great they're doing it, but how hard was it to convince people and show them that things aren't the same as when Grandpa went to school, you know? And I'll throw it out to Mike. He's older. Mike, you're older. Go ahead.
Well, that might not be true, but all that to say, here's what's really important. We, as a firm, never convince anyone of anything. We go into a community and we say, tell us what's important for your kids. And they tell us what's important. And we say, okay, here solve for those challenges, those opportunities, and those things that you prioritize. And so when we went into Tensleep, and I got to tell you, the people in Tensleep, if you're thinking of like a small rural town that doesn't, you know, it doesn't have, you know, a lot going on, a sleepy little place, the board members of this community, as an example, are tech entrepreneurs. They are, they've been business leaders in their communities. They're politicians. So this is a community that is a group of brilliant and intelligent and hardworking people. And so as a consequence of that, one of the main, so we worked with them to develop 6 or 7 priorities for their project. And that said, above all else, we need to keep these priorities right in front of us. And alongside building community and trusting relationships and access to technology and all these things, one of those priorities was bringing the best of learning around the world to Tensleep. That was one of the priorities that they wanted.
And you guys are great at that. You guys are great at that.
And so we said, great, here's what other schools around the world are doing, and this is how it aligns with the other priorities you have. And so it became, there was no convincing. It was truly having the community design and decide and choose, hey, this is what we want. We want to think about teaching and learning this way. So.
I just love hearing that story. Okay, that, you know, it all boils down to equity and access. Okay, the kids in Tensleep need an equitable place to learn. Okay, that doesn't matter if they're in Tensleep, you know, 10 hours from Laramie, 5 hours driving from Laramie. Doesn't matter. Okay, they need access to the same learning and the same thing that the kid in the heart of New York City needs. Okay, and with the way you described the town just now with the tech entrepreneurs and all that sort of thing, I mean, I think it's just great what they did. I think it's just fabulous. I love the way you said we don't have to convince anybody. We're working with them all the way through. You know, it's that simple. When does the new school, have you broke ground? When's the new school? What's going on? Justin, where are we on the new school?
So we're still in the final stages of design. So we're working through, you know, final construction documentation with the engineering team. Ground will break in spring of 2023. And
cool.
The school will open fall of 25.
Oh, so it's going to be take a year to build it.
Yeah, a school of this size is usually about the 18 to 24 month time frame.
Wow, I think you're going to say you're going to break ground in spring of 2023, and you're going to open in September of 2023. That's what I thought you were going to say. Okay,
I know.
There's
a lot of skilled labor in this area, but that's an aggressive schedule for sure.
Obviously it is. Okay. Obviously it is. So it's going to take basically a year and a half to build this, right? 2 years, whatever.
Correct. Yes.
Wow.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I do want to say one thing. Larry, real quick, a really cool thing about the building here is that there's a lot of other talented and brilliant people in Ten Sleep that are artists and artisans.
Oh.
And the team has worked and will continue to work with sourcing local features to really make this place so it is truly built. The materials are, you know, the things that are added to the building are representative of community members.
Yep.
Exactly.
Beautiful. It's going to be just gorgeous. I got to tell you. Okay, I'm very pissed. One other thing I wanted to ask you, as you build the new school compared to the old school, you mentioned that the tech stuff, a lot of it's in the library. But I know you guys, you can't just have everything in the library. Okay, and just either Justin or Mike, whoever wants to do this, the infrastructure of the school. Okay, what's in there? Is there like an audio system built in? Is there high-tech wiring, broadband, whatever built in? What's built in that's different? Okay, if anything, or the lighting, whatever it might be. What's the infrastructure?
Sure.
Who was
there? Sure, yeah. I think for learning resources, the beauty of the wireless age, right? You know, everything can be handled via Wi-Fi and through more of a software or app-based approach versus things hardwired. Obviously, the school still supports, you know, displays and other hardware technology. But the patterns we're seeing, you know, as teaching and learning evolves and technology is integral to that, that more and more things are becoming mobile. They're becoming smaller footprints and form factors. So really, the response to that is creating spaces of collaboration. Spaces of focused learning, right? So there is a discrete art room, for example. We have a science and robotics lab. We have an IT hub base, right, where students actually engage with the IT director of the school, right? So it's really about creating spaces that support you know, a lot more of the student autonomy and experience with that technology. And obviously, you know, it's going to continue to evolve in the coming decades.
And I want to add, you know, Larry, I want to give you a word. Yeah, I want to give you a word. I don't know if Ten Sleep coined this term, but something to think about is we're entering the digital age. It's the physical and the digital. So,
Did you say digital?
With a PH.
Digital.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, we have all this technology, but you can imagine during COVID, you know, rows of kids on a laptop facing forward, all doing something on a computer. Well, that's not helping anyone. That's not actually equipping kids with the skills that they need. So, you know, Justin has done an amazing job of creating spaces that allow people to have relationships, to work together, to work side by side, but still have this computer or this technology as a part of the learning experience so that they are becoming authors and not just consumers of digital technology. And so the labs and those environments that he's mentioning are including more resources to actually be creators with technology and not just consumers, but then to also create the spaces where relationships in person-to-person form are centered, because it's not just digital relationships. We still need to be able to talk to one another and collaborate with one another in the room. And so the building has a blend of these spaces to really create what I'm starting to call these digital relationships, digital experiences. Yep.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. It's good. Write us something. I like it. You can put it in the magazine. Okay. I like that whole idea because things are.
We'll have you publish it for us. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do that. And you know, there's another side to this, and I have to say this: it is not easy for any school district to find teachers these days. Okay, it's especially difficult for a small rural district, okay, to find teachers. And one of the things that will attract a good educator is a state-of-the-art building to work in. Okay, so when Ten Sleep, okay, builds this new school with the future in mind, the 22nd century, if I may, in mind, 22nd century learning, okay, it's going to be easier to attract teachers. Okay, it's that simple, and it's real important that people understand that. So building a new school these days really matters, and building it right really matters. Okay, that's all I have to say on that one. Justin, thanks for being here today, buddy. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us, Larry.
Great, man. Thank you. And Mike, as always, thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to the next one, as always.
Yeah, me too. And write us an article, the Digital Age of Schools. Digital.
That's right, the fidgetal age.
Because kids do fidget, but we're not talking about that.
We're not talking about that one, no.
No, we're not.
Well, we are talking about that too. So, all right. Well, thanks, Larry. We appreciate it.
Be good, guys. We appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Okay. Fielding International, and that's fieldingintl.com. Fieldinginternational.com. You can just Google it. They have great stuff on the website. And I'll tell you, what goes into building a new school and designing and redesigning schools, okay, is something just incredible as we get ready for, I hate to say it, 22nd century learning. Okay, we're going to archive this at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.